Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special episode of The Housewives Archives. I can't remember.
Shall I do it?
No, I've got it. A podcast where we discuss in all detail. No, a podcast where we discuss in...
Podcast.
What is it? A podcast where we discuss...
In great depth.
Okay, got it. A podcast where we discuss in great depth all things Real Housewives. My name's Ellie Nunn, and James, I thought you was going to get with Alex. It's my co-host, James Evans.
Hi.
See, now, I got thrown there in my defense because we're not talking about the Real Housewives today. It's thrown me through a loop.
Yes.
And also, you just like lobbed the intro at me 5 seconds before we started recording, and it meant I had to come up with a witticism, and I couldn't remember how Alan Cummings said dollars, so...
Dollars. No, that was terrible.
Dollars.
There's been a murder.
Now, before we say anything else, I think it's worth addressing, as co-hosts of this podcast, the slight uncanniness... The Traitors US chose your doppelganger, Mr. Alan Cummings, in totally high camp tartan, exactly how I think you would present the show.
It's how I go through life when I'm running errands.
And that the UK Traitors only went and chose the most famous fringed brunette suit-wearing UK presenter, Claudia Winkleman. It's like our doppelgangers... presented the shows, and I think I would have presented it very like her, but with bigger breasts.
I mean, they approached me first, and it's one of the biggest regrets I've ever had. I was like, that sounds terrible. I play mafia on the daily. I'm not going to do that. And then they went to Alan, my nemesis, stalker. Ugh,
typical. No, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, and it's like, what? Where's all of my wonderful Real Housewives juicy content that I'm used to? James and I could not pass up the opportunity to use our enormous platform and our nationwide audience, our international.
I don't know why you're laughing.
To discuss the absolute phenomenon that has been The Traitors UK. US.
We had to take it onto this podcast for nothing else because I have exhausted the amount of family and friends that I've been chatting, cornering and yelling at them Dorinda style about how amazing, how simple but effective this show is.
James, I'm in a new relationship. It's a miracle he hasn't left.
I know.
It's been the ultimate test. I put him through about 3 episodes before it was a hard veto came down. So... for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, I've already said that. But just to explain what The Traitors is, no, I'm doing this all wrong. I'm giddy, James. This is particularly exciting for James and I because we actually haven't spoken about The Traitors yet, apart from the odd text message. So we're both sort of frothing with excitement to get into the discussion. Firstly, I should probably just say, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm well. I'm currently in Cincinnati doing a show. I don't know if you saw, I had a moustache the other day. I had to grow it super quick.
I know, where's it gone?
They didn't want it anymore, so I had to get rid of it again. Barbara Kay came and went.
It was Barbara 2.0 and then she was gone.
A little cameo.
Little flash.
Flashed her hammer, said hi, and then left.
I've been laughing a lot because I've been... So before we get on to The Traitors, I dipped back into Real Housewives of New York. I've had the most wonderful couple of weeks watching... basically from Bethany's re-entrance. I think I watched about halfway through that season, through now to Bethany's exit.
Oh, wow.
And it's felt really sad because I've got to Bethany's exit and it's that moment where you go, oh, there's not really any point in me carrying on. I could, but it's not going to give me the same hit that I'm looking for. And it's also that it's tinged with this sadness of knowing that it's all coming to an end. And it just, it does not get better than then really, I've got to give it to her. It's because of Luanne's journey through Tom and her arrest and then Cabaret is just such a satisfying arc. She's so satisfyingly insufferable. Mm-hmm. And I'm really gutted to have got to the end of it. And anyway, I've been watching Barbara Kay.
So the highlight of that whole journey, really.
It's so funny when they're in Miami and you basically forget she's there until that morning where she comes in and is upset that no one's talking to her. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're on this trip.
It's one of those fascinating, and it happens on occasion throughout the cities, where they've cast someone clearly as a full-time housewife, they're filming as a full-time housewife.
Who just can't deliver.
And they sort of get demoted in real time as they're filming, and she starts having that
demoted
breakdown.
Demoted in real time, to the point that by the reunion, she's not even in the, she's in the reunion for about 10 minutes.
She's just like this tanned ghost. They all sort of take the piss out of her for her spray tan. Bethany wipes it off of her as some sort of show of dominance, like the alpha dog picking on the runt of the litter. And then she just shuffles off stage again.
Oh my God. I totally forgot that that was the reunion where when they wheel Barbara Kay out.
Wheel to on a big JCB.
Talk about how Luanne can't sing. And when Luanne's like, well, I'll have you know, if I can't sing, then why have I just been cast in Chicago? On Broadway.
That's where Barbara Kay shines. She's the straight woman to set Luanne up, to hit it out the park once again with a fantastic episode of Delusion. But just, yeah, so bizarre when Barbara Kay is just having a nervous breakdown in Miami and she's like, I don't think I'm cut out for this. And everyone else is sort of like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you are.
Oh, it's so mad.
So interesting. How did we get onto Barbara Kay? Oh, my moustache. How are you?
Good. We simply don't have time for
we've got
all of the chaos of my life. So we just need to
dive in.
So really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Wait. Okay. We should probably start by explaining, just in case for some reason, well, I suppose someone might be listening to this where they haven't seen The Traitors because they're expecting Real Housewives content, which we should be delivering.
Fair enough.
It's fair.
Yeah.
So for anyone who's severely disappointed, The Traitors is a new TV show that has caught fire very quickly. So quickly, in fact, that I believe that they basically filmed the UK one. And then the second that the UK cast were wheeled out, they just flew in the American
cast.
They just
like, come on in, Brandy.
The same castle and straight after the Australia. I mean, they realized they hit gold and they were just like getting your money's worth, cash in. So
yeah.
James and I are all too familiar with the game Mafia, because any theatre kid or person who has spent a summer trekking it up to Edinburgh and flying in the rain will be familiar with the lifesaver that is the late night drinking game Mafia. So the way Mafia works as a game, we'd all be sort of sat around in some grimy kitchen in Edinburgh with like warm glasses of cheap Jacob's Creek white wine, and everyone's sort of smoking out the window.
Yeah.
And someone terribly narcissistic normally and quite full of themselves would narrate the entire evening, where the setup is that you're all villagers in a small town and they silently choose a couple of people by tapping them when everyone's got their eyes shut to be the mafia. And then everyone closes their eyes, and at night the mafia open their eyes and they silently choose people to kill off. And then between rounds, you as the villagers have to all debate amongst yourselves who you think it is. And it's basically an excuse for everyone to get very drunk and very defensive and shout at each other and get... I mean, they're very gripping games.
Oh, yeah. It will end in tears.
You sort of... You love it or hate it. I saw so many couples argue because it was like, I didn't know you could lie like that.
I didn't know you had this side to you.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I think we're thinking about the same...
I think we're thinking about
the same game where that happened. It's quite a Marmite game. I know some people, like my lovely ex-boyfriend Andy, loathed it because he said if you're naturally quiet, then everyone just votes you off immediately for being too quiet.
They've got something to hide.
Exactly. And he said basically Mafia just meant I would spend the evening, because once you're dead, you also aren't allowed to speak. So if it's like I just spend the evening... basically Jinx just silently in the corner watching everyone else play a game. It was no fun whatsoever.
I also think it affects, because I've now played it with my friends who aren't theatre people, they're not actors, and I'm now lumbered with the role of being the narrator.
Oh, the narcissistic
narrator.
I'm
the only one with the sense of storytelling, and also because I look like Alan Cumming. So I then feel like I can never have fun in the game, and then I'm watching people who, they don't commit to the bit, you know?
oh, that's no good. That's no good at all. Get yourself some tartan and I'm sure that they'll perk up.
I know, a tartan berry and then we're good to go. And then I think people will catch on about how,
the
how
high
seriously
camp.
We're
we
meant
need
to take the game. Right.
So,
that's how I catch their attention.
The premise of the game has been taken into TV show format, utterly glorious high camp, all in this castle up in Scotland where, oh, well, we'll talk about discrepancies between the UK and the US one, but, you know, they're all staying at this castle and every night the chosen traitors murder someone. So what's interesting about this is I watched the UK one first and then the US series, and you watched the US series and then the UK one.
Yes.
And I wonder if that will make a difference to what our experience of the show was, because they're quite different.
Oh, completely. I don't really know which one to talk about first. I think maybe it makes sense.
I was just going to say they're so interesting because they're so different, even that despite being on the same set, all of the tasks and missions are the same. Mm-hmm. Sets and the same games, and so it's really interesting to have quite a literal sort of side-by-side comparison.
Right.
The most notable difference being that the US version of the show decided to incorporate sort of B, C-list celebrities from other reality TV shows mixed in with sort of regular everyday folk, where the UK show was entirely
Muggles.
Sort of muggles, which I think totally changes the dynamic. Do you think better to start with the UK one? I think the UK is the original.
Okay, all right. We can start with the UK one. The UK one, I have more recency bias towards it. I'm kind of chomping at the bit to talk about it.
Let's do it.
So UK one is all normies. And the big takeaway for me that I found is the cultural differences. And what really surprised me about the UK one is how much more emotional it felt, how viscerally people were affected by the game, how much it took a toll on them, both faithfuls and traitors alike. That for the most part, the majority of the traitors, there was like a really heavy emotional toll where they were racked with guilt. And that really surprised me, considering stereotypically we're all stiff upper lip. I thought people would have much more easily been able to sort of quantify the game as a game. And
I feel like there was a degree of cabin fever in a way that the US show, everyone involved seemed to have much more of a sense of reality TV and the demands of reality TV and what the show wanted from them, where it really feels like the UK one, they were all trapped there and there was a sort of spiraling effect. You really got the sense of claustrophobia and the sense, like you say, of how it wore down people.
Yeah.
And I think in a way that's why there was a much more visceral response, is because of that. The Brits, I feel like everyone was very emotional from the start on the American one, where I think people's sensibilities were much more exposed in the UK one by the relentlessness of the show as it went on.
Yeah.
And the kind of oppressive nature of it.
I was also thinking, do you remember that line in When the Rain Stops Falling, when they're talking about how different countries can weather different metaphorical or literal storms differently depending on how naturally chaotic they are in terms of their history. And a country like Italy can kind of weather a lot of drama in its stride, whereas something like the UK is so, obviously sweeping generalizations here where I'm quoting this play, is so much more buttoned up and we're so much more used to the straight and narrow, where if something like Brexit happens, it seems to completely throw us all off kilter and there's like a moment of mass hysteria. It felt a bit like that here, where as soon as the dam broke, there was no fixing it. And what did feel very British to me is after people display very genuine instances of emotion, people sort of punished that and looked at it slightly askance, where that guy who had the nervous breakdown and had to walk out of the round table.
Aaron.
Yeah, had a genuine panic attack. And then that the massage therapist, the next morning that performance was Oscar worthy.
Only to burst into tears like 30 seconds later. Like, put my name down on that.
Put my name on the pine tower. I can't take it anymore. No, John.
Okay,
so fucking
more
funny
to come on that breakfast.
Yes.
Which is basically the entire reason we're doing this episode.
I just find it interesting how on the American version, the normal people also, it seemed to take an emotional toll on them, and there would be lots of tears there, but that seemed to kind of be a defense for them. And whereas on the UK version, it's like if anyone burst into tears, suddenly all eyes were on them and suspicion was thrown their way.
Well, let's talk about the first person voted off. You can't not talk about this on the UK traitors.
Now this I text you about.
Also, obviously, spoiler alerts for both of these series, but the so the first person to be voted off, the UK traitors, obviously, and it's the same when you play Mafia, when you're on the first round, you've got nothing to go on unless it's like, oh, I felt you shift or whatever.
I think that's what's so funny about this show is that it has all the pomp and circumstance and the camp and the budget, but it just boils down to the exact same game we all play in some kitchen, in some student housing.
The minutiae where you have nothing to go on.
Where you're just like, oh, you just like weird vibes you're giving
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, yeah, I heard a bit of rustling over there.
Exactly. Exactly. And where you have to be so sort of absolute in it and so absolute in your convictions. And this is what, you know, one of the things I always found quite hard about the game and what I found hard watching it is people talking in these sweeping statements and sort of using these very definitive terms about something where categorically the point is you don't know. And it requires such a level of self-belief I've don't think I've ever seen. But so the very first woman to be voted off was based off of the very flimsy evidence that she didn't cheers when they all decided to cheers to the faithful.
Outrageous.
This woman only had one hand.
God.
Because she had a disability, and she very calmly explained when faced with this accusation that she hadn't cheersed, that the glass was closer to her.
So it was on her right hand side, she was missing her right hand,
which she very calmly explained. And you thought, oh, they're all going to be really embarrassed about this and have to go, God, our bad. That's how humiliating. We all have to say, nope,
nope.
Don't they buy all it. Were like, sorry. I'm sticking to it.
To be honest, I'm surprised it even got to that point because when they had that round table and then the one traitor, Alyssa, noticed that and she was like, she says in her talking head, I'm going to float this idea that Nikki is a traitor because she didn't cheers with everyone. I was like, no, don't do that. That's going to come back and bite you in the ass. People are going to, she's got a disability, you arsehole. And then suddenly everyone was like, oh, wow, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, what? How are we going along with this?
A very British faux pas start.
There was a real pack mentality in the UK version. Well, in all the versions. And I think talking about the second person to be eliminated, Imran, who was a scientist, reminded us several times that he's like the youngest person in the world ever to get a PhD.
I mean, am I going to tell them that I'm one of the youngest people ever to be involved in Mensa? No, probably not. Am I going to tell them that that I already have my PhD when I'm only 21? No, probably not.
Right, Imran. Yes. And it's very easy to make that witch hunt comparison, but in this case, it did feel very Crucible-esque, where this scientist is saying, okay, guys, the first round, very calmly explaining, the first round, we all sort of lost ourselves a bit, got swept up in the mass hysteria and voted as sheep to eliminate someone who was a faithful. I'm just saying this time, let's try really taking in any evidence that we have and just voting using our heads rather than our hearts. And to that, everyone is like, he's a witch! Get him out! And then that was like another thing with the emotion where it's a frustrating thing where in Traitors, you seemingly can't win because there was this real butting of heads between Imran, who was very stoic and unemotional and all about facts and science, with Theo, who's like, I think with my heart, and if I'm too emotional, then that's on you. And maybe you need to stop being such a psychopath.
Someone was saying to me the other day that they found Theo quite worrying. He had a heightened level of emotion that felt like he could sort of flip at any point. And his response, I don't think I've ever seen someone so sensitive to like the most flippant comments of being like, Theo, I think you're being a bit emotional. That when it kept cutting to him sat looking at the ceiling, being like,
yes, there's a lot of ceiling work going on.
Like he was just like,
oh my God.
And just like a lot of heavy breathing as well.
Yeah.
So I also want to talk about Faye, who from the start, for some reason, well, firstly, from the start, was just instantly disliked by everyone.
Yes.
With no real evidence.
No.
And then went on to be considered a real sort of pillar of...
the community.
Decision making. And people kept looking to her like, I really, you know, Faye's very strong in her choices. And she's very sure. I'm sorry, but every round table, Faye flipped on her. She'd say someone and then she'd be like, yeah, actually, I think you're probably right. I think it might be or whatever. She was the flimsiest person. I think just because she looked quite strong, people thought that
and
she...
And she did speak with a lot of authority.
She had like a weight, yeah. But she actually flip-flopped back and forward endlessly.
That's very true. And I hadn't actually noticed that. But now I'm like, the Rolodex in my head. I'm going back. She's a traitor.
That's what I'm saying. So, yes, we had the infamous now. I think the person that I have to talk about next, and the only person who prompted any emotional response from my boyfriend in his sort of haze of not really watching the show, was Maddie. Whom he loathed and whom I loathed.
I mean, to be fair to her, she was right.
That was the worst part, was that she was right, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And it was so frustrating because I was like, she's going to feel vindicated if she finds out.
Right.
But the way she's gone about it, I was so with Aaron when those times where he'd just be like, oh, Maddie, you are, I actually can't deal with you anymore. It's one thing to do that at the round table and to go, so for anyone who didn't watch Maddie, she would go in on the same people every time so relentlessly. But with this, what I was saying about talking in absolutes, but also it was like a level of accusatory that was somehow very patronizing as well. And partly because she spoke in quite a labored way.
Yeah.
It was it was a bit like she was talking to a child where it was like, I'm sorry, Wilf, but I do just think it's you. And then when he'd be like, well, maybe you're a traitor, and it'd be like, yeah, but I'm not. I'm a faithful, and you are a traitor and stuff. It was dry. Okay, that's one thing in the round table. But she was like that 24/7. If I'd been in there, whether I was a traitor or not, I'd have been like, get her out. Like, please, can the traitors murder her tonight? Because I couldn't have lived with her.
She really reminds me, there's a Real Housewife on Dallas who has a very similar arguing style to Maddie, where there's like one really hilarious fight where she has with another woman who adopts a baby, and she criticizes this woman for adopting the baby for whatever reason. It escapes me now. And this woman's friend says, you're bashing her for adopting a baby. And the woman, Cameron, is thick and thought she said that she's bashing an adopted baby. And then this woman, Cameron, is like, I would never bash an adopted baby. That's disgusting. And then people are like, no, I didn't say that. I was saying you were bashing Brandy for adopting a baby. And people would explain it again and again. And then it would just cut to Cameron going, but I would never bash an adopted baby. And it's like, we know, we get it. And it's the same reprise with Maddie. There's no modulation in her argument or even her tone of voice, where Wilf would work himself up into a tizzy, like tearing his hair out, like giving blood, giving a pound of flesh.
She's like, yeah, I just think you're lying.
I just think you're a traitor, though.
There was something about her delivery just drove me absolutely mad. And also the point they were all making, even though she was right about Wilf, but the thing with it was like, you're not exploring any other avenue. You're not playing the game.
This happens actually because in the interim, in the time it took us to set up a time to record this podcast, I took it upon myself to watch the Australian Traitors as well.
No, and I can't wait to watch that.
It's very different gameplay. In general, they are so unemotional about it, and they're very good at just keeping it a game, and they're very good at the way that they work out these traitors so quickly. But it's hilarious because what gets it going is there's this mad woman who's a clairvoyant. And in the very first round table, people keep saying, well, who do you think it is? And she's like, I'm going to wait until the round table. And so people are like, here's the round table. What do you think? And she says, I think it's this person, this person, this person, and this person. Gets up, leaves, and then exits the game and never comes back. Out of the four people that she's named, and there's also four traitors in the Australian version, she gets two out of the four right. By the grace of God, or maybe it's through her clairvoyancy, who knows. And they really cotton on to that. And then there's this one guy, Mark, who really spearheads this campaign to get these two traitors out. And it's this infuriating Maddie-esque thing where it's like, well, you are right because they are traitors, but this is so batshit that we're doing it off of a woman who claims to be a clairvoyant predicted that it was these people.
It's such a shame because this show, it's so good. And I'm so sad because it's going to now be a staple of television. And just like that early Real Housewives, it's so good at the beginning because it's just fresh and no one knows what they're doing. And it's all different. And it's so sad because so quickly it's going to become formulaic and it's going to become, you know, what works for the show. And I just think we have to really treasure these first seasons for each.
Yeah, the effective simplicity of it. Because also, I think people's gameplay is going to
be totally different.
People are going to start circling the drain because people are then going to go, okay, so Maddie thought that I was a traitor, so we can't kill her because then it will look like I'm a traitor, which I am. But then people are going to think that that's what a traitor would do. So then maybe we should kill her.
Yeah.
But then maybe people...
But also, it's a bit like my personal experience when we were playing Mafia was I was actually very good at Mafia. And the problem with Mafia is if you have played a blinder one time and won it,
you
get voted out very quickly from then on. Because no matter how you play it, everyone's like, yeah, but Ellie's really good at this game. And so we might as well just vote her out to see if... Like, there's nothing lost there. The element of the unknown is what makes people good at the game. And like you say, for now, people will have a template that they're going on, that they're trying to subvert. And anyway, so I want to talk about the episode 4, Breakfast.
It's, I say this about every episode of The Real Housewives, it's the peak cross-section of comedy and high drama.
It's
like a lofty,
one of the
operatic...
campest- It's the closest anything in UK television has come to that operatic style of New Jersey, where
they're on this like long Midsommar-esque banquet table with like flowers and garlands everywhere. So the scene has already been set.
Also, it's just like a perfect, it's like a perfect amount of time in. So they've had this very intense round table where a boy called Aaron had a total nervous breakdown sort of out of nowhere about being voted off by everyone. So emotions have been really high and everyone's clearly a bit shattered the next day, from especially him, from this. I don't think any of them had realised entering the game how primal sort of a part of you is hit when you're accused of something you haven't done. And I think at that point, they're all suddenly like, oh, this is emotionally exhausting. And this man, John, who up until this point has probably been like the most popular person in the game, has just turned on a dime and become really quite vicious. And for
really
some
nasty.
Reason, particularly nasty to this boy, Aaron.
Because this poor boy, Aaron, who happens to have ADHD, took an interest in John's
big mistake,
job, which
huge.
Is a massage therapist. So he asked him lots of questions about how he got his certification and how many hours he had to put in and did he have to pay for it himself and blah, 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 blah. So obviously, that's very suspicious.
Yeah.
Why is he grilling me like that?
John felt like he was on trial.
Yeah.
So in both versions of the show... It's not massively clear. There's the occasional thing that gets added as part of the gameplay that I think is a bit murky. And this is one of those instances where Claudia Winkleman comes in and drops this big bombshell that tonight there will be no murder.
Right.
Instead, three people will be put on trial. And everyone's like, and I was like, what is that? And it was never really clarified. And it was the same in the US one where everyone was like, no. And I was like, what does that mean, on trial? And it was like the traitors will watch their every move. And it was like, they're doing that anyway.
Yeah, there's no real trial. You just sort of go about your day and hope for the best that you don't get murdered.
And there was no on trial. I thought
you'd have to like
when
plead
it was
your
introduced
case.
That they were going to, that it was going to, do you remember in Mafia, there'd be a point where you had to get up and plead your case?
Yes.
I thought it was going to be like that they had to get up one by one and say why they weren't a traitor. No such luck. Anyway, they all come down to breakfast. No one's dead. Shocker. Instead, we find out. So John's come down and immediately had a go at Aaron for crying last night.
For just being there. Yeah.
For just being there.
That he's still there.
So emotions already quite high. Claudia Winkleman comes in and drops the bombshell that three people are on trial. And those people are Ivan, Alex, and John. And immediately it's like they've just found out that tonight one of them will be receiving the death penalty.
Ivan bursts into tears.
If Ivan just bursts into tears. I mean, but in such an authentic, raw way. Just like pure emotion. He burst into tears. John then, amazingly, having just had a go at Aaron for his Oscar-winning performance last night, has a small breakdown and basically dares them all to write his name that night so that he can prove his innocence. And it's so high drama, this thing of being like, he basically is like, you'll see, you're all see.
Yeah.
Like, whilst leaving
you'll
the room.
You'll see the truth.
And being chased down Bador. The corridor. Yeah. Very, very Shannon Bador.
She would be good in it. Oh my God.
Oh, absolutely. Next one. She'd get Shannon Bador.
Yeah. She would go crazy. She'd be so paranoid. Anyway.
So, one ingredient in the UK production that worked very well is that there was a couple who pretended they weren't a couple. An obnoxious magician called Tom with pink hair and his girlfriend Alex. And just for fun, they threw in a very sweet BMX rider called Matt, and basically said, Matt, we'd love you to be totally in love with
she's
Alex.
She's single and she really fancies
she's
you.
She's single, and if we could just get some vox pops of you being like, I mean, I didn't come here to find a girlfriend.
I want to marry her.
But like, now it looks like I'm going to leave with one. So John's just walked out the room in a hissy fit. Tom takes this moment in one of the most manic episodes of anything I've ever seen to stand up. Clearly he's had in his head, okay, at some point this needs to come out that we're a couple in a really good reality TV show way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he's like, now it's now. And he stands up and he's like, guys, he's so fundamental. Guys, so this is a lot what I'm gonna say, but I'm telling you now, Alex isn't a traitor. She's not a traitor, but she's my girlfriend. And everyone's like, what? And then what then happens can only be described as the most intense case of like word vomit. He becomes this unstoppable moron where he's like, she's my girlfriend. I'm sorry. We lied. Particularly sorry to you, Matt. That's been really difficult. Guys, I've massively underplayed who I am. I'm a magician. I read people for a living. I've massively underplayed it. It's really clear to me. Ivan's traitor. Sorry, Ivan. I think you've done a great game. You're brilliant. And Hannah, you're a traitor. And everyone's just like, he's just like, boom, boom, boom. Anyway, he goes on this complete torrent.
It is word vomit in a way that I didn't know that's what people actually did. I thought that was like a theatrical, like, stage placeholder for nervousness.
It's
I didn't know people in real life actually word vomited like that. Yeah.
And then there's that amazing moment where I think it's Amanda is like, all right, Tom, I've got to stop you because it's a lot. And he just goes, yeah. And just like leans over and it's literally like, he's like, yeah, yeah.
It's just a game. Yeah, no, it's a game, Tom.
Yeah. And then there's an amazing moment.
You're never going to find them.
His girlfriend gets up and tries to very calmly be like, okay, I didn't know Tom was going to do that. I know this is a lot for you all. And as she's speaking off camera, Tom just gives these little like tidbits into, so she'll be like, it's been horrible for us hiding. Horrible. We never meant for this. No, we didn't. We knew. Yeah. It's just... Oh, and in the middle of all of this, Maddie wonderfully turns to Matt, who looks like he's just had his heart smashed into a million pieces, and just goes, I thought you was going to get with Alex.
Yeah, shut up, Maddie. Shut up.
We've got Hannah kicks off at being accused as well, and she's a great kind of 0 to 100er of just like,
she's in a perpetual state. Yeah, even at the end of every round table, even like the second round table, we're not that far into the game, she'll be like, right, I'm really fucked off now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like at a perpetual state of, I'm out of 10.
Right. And then just to top it all off, lovely BMX rider Matt tries to string a sentence together about why he's upset, only to burst into tears. But it's like he deflates into his own arm. And again, pink-haired magician Tom just doesn't pick up on it and is a bit like, yeah, Matt, it's been particularly hard with you, mate. And you're just like, oh, shut up. At which point we have glorious Amanda, who is, of course, secretly a traitor, stopping everyone with a kind of, enough, a Taylor moment.
Yes, very Taylor.
You're never going to find them. It's extraordinary. It's so... good. And it's like they all just took a massive shit. The relief afterwards, it's like the
I know.
It's so great.
It's that kind of emotion that we never see on any of the other traitors.
Well, I was about to say, I think that the US one was missing that because there was a lot of performative emotion and there was a lot of like, this is how much it means to me, but we never lost control like that Breakfast did.
Right.
And that's really what we want to see.
It's another one where I feel like the producers for the traitors clearly are like champing at the bit to work in a Lord of the Flies reference somewhere. Uh-huh. But it kind of, they don't need to really shoehorn it in because it really does happen. And by the point that Kieran and Amos return to the game, they're like, what the hell's happened? We left these people at the beginning of the game and they were normal, civilized human beings. And it's like the humanity has just completely been destroyed.
Yeah, I think that the US one was always too in control of itself. And with that emphasis on like show, everything was like much more planted.
I also think... Sorry.
No, sorry. My dog strongly disagrees about that.
Traitor. Molly, you'll be getting my vote tonight.
Way too much emotion. yes. I think talking about Kieran and Amos. Oh, we haven't spoken about Andrea. A lovely...
Oh.
7-year-old widowed lesbian. Well, yes. You're all my grandchildren from now is all I can say. Now, the problem with Andrea being involved was you can't put someone in who people are too heartbroken to accuse. I think the best thing would have been if she had been a traitor. I found it a little bit tricky, and it's one of the things that's a hard dynamic with the show. The one time that it was even remotely questioned and she started crying in the roundtable, and I thought, well, this is... This is difficult because I think if you have someone, I think everyone has to be fair game. And something I found hard with the show was when someone like Maddie would be like, I don't think it's Kieran because he's got kids. And it was like, you were literally there when Claudia Maddie. Winkleman chose and tapped people on the shoulders. Like, it's so stupid. This idea that people kept being like, oh, they couldn't do it. And I'm like, no, you all could do it because the point of the show was that any of you could be traitors.
They probably would pick the person who's least likely to do it. That's what, and I think that'll be interesting going forward with future series, whether they
lean into
keep
that
to that. There seemed to be a similar demographic in all of the traitors where they'd have like one young guy who's a bit of a loose cannon and seems to like enjoy it a bit too much.
Christian.
And then there's like, yeah. And then there's one like maternal mother hen that no one suspects and they think she can possibly do it because she's got kids.
Well, that's the thing is that exactly. And I found it interesting when Andrea was like, well, you know, I'll start things off. I just have to say, you know, I think it has to be young people. So I am going to look at you, young people. And it's like, why? The traitors aren't having to do added jogs up the hill.
No, you're not doing a decathlon before you murder someone.
Generally, that was quite an interesting thing that on the US show, they tried to pretend as if they were all staying in the castle. And on the UK one, they very much leaned into the fact that they obviously weren't staying on the castle. And I just couldn't get my head around the logistics of the show because I kept thinking, well, hang on, do the people who are the traitors, do they have to get driven back to the castle in the middle of the night? When do they sleep if they're having to
film that? I was wondering that. Yeah.
And how do people not notice?
Yeah. So are they all... So they're sequestered presumably in like a Premier Inn somewhere. But then are they all on the same floor? Are they in rooms next to each other? Because then would they then...
You'd notice...
If you're a faithful, you're in your room. Would you hear the PA coming to get someone from the room next door to you?
I kept thinking about it.
Well, I know that Amanda's next door to me. Yeah.
So yes, that was on my mind. Especially the times when they'd like add a traitor. And they'd be like, they'll be right here in a minute. And I was like, well, that can't work. You can't. They can't just be like stood in that turret for 3 hours.
Right.
Kieran and Amos. What did you think? So that was one thing that was missing on the US one was the sort of reintroduction. I thought that was a great play in the first episode when they got rid of two people immediately.
Oh, yeah. It was like, we're not fanning about here. This is cutthroat from the beginning. And let me tell you, I would have gone because I would have put myself in.
It would have been you and me.
I would have been
it?
Mr. Nice Guy. Well, it's been nice playing. Thanks, Claudia. All the best.
I may have to incorporate that into my teaching style next term.
I guess, yes, like, just for shits and giggles.
Which two people think they're not that they're going to do the worst on my Sondheim course? And be like, get out. I take you at your word. You fail. And then halfway through be like, jokes, they're doing Send of the Clowns. Let's bring them back.
I guess they can't do that in the American one. They can't fly a load of people from America all the way to the Scottish Islands and they put them there. They don't even allow them into the castle and they're like, right,
that's
fuck
true.
Off.
That would have been amazing.
Back to Michigan.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So You want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Yeah. I didn't know how I felt about people coming in halfway through, and whilst I thought they did well, I didn't love Kieran. I found something in him set me on edge, and I think that really came to the forefront after he was recruited by Wilf, because, mm-hmm. I mean, Wilf really shot himself in the foot with that one. To pick the person sort of most defensive.
Yeah.
There was a real, I only seem to be able to describe it in like a physical action of like a digging in of heels. And just mm-hmm. those last few episodes, it really put me on edge, that whole thing of being like, mate, you've been saying something about me, where I just thought it was like, went to a real sort of Danny Dyer thing. Like, you fuck me around, I'll fucking take you down with me, kind of thing. And you could see that Wilf was like, I'm in too deep. And there was a slight sense of like, oh, I've been burned.
Yeah, Kieran was very humourless about his gameplay. And there was no sense of appreciating the ridiculousness of meeting in a turret, in a cloak, in a hood. Yeah,
exactly.
And I think that really, it kind of ruined the ending for me.
I totally agree. It soured the high campness into being, I actually found the last episode of the UK one very stressful to watch, mm-hmm. because you knew that they were going to go for Kieran, and the way that Kieran played it, that he knew that, and it was just like, yeah, all right, let's just get to the end. And that they were like, why aren't you fighting this? And mm-hmm. you knew he was going to take Wilf down as well. So you could see it coming, and that was just uncomfortable because you thought, oh, you're not playing the game. One thing I really appreciated with the US one was that none of the traitors ever dobbed in, even if they'd been fucked over. They understood the gameplay well enough that you don't... I thought that was actually really poor form.
Yeah, it wasn't cricket. And then there must be a rule where they say, if you're a traitor and you've been eliminated, you can't say, by the way, Wilf's a traitor, but clearly Kieran was doing as much as he possibly could to say that.
And I just
so
thought he could have, I thought he could have said Wilf as mm-hmm. his person without saying a parting gift and making it felt a bit like someone ruining. It felt like sometimes when we would play Mafia on those drunken nights in Edinburgh, you'd be right near the end of the game and one of the dead people would accidentally sort of speak or say something that gave it away. And it feels like you've wasted so much time and investment in something that's a bit spoiled.
And it's kind of then means there's no possible way that the traitors could win, because it's only by luck that Ari didn't do the same thing to Seri?
Because I think he understood.
He understood, because then I think TV they tried, the producers try and engineer it where I think if the Faithfuls are really good and they eliminate a lot of the traitors early on, they're always going to keep recruiting new traitors, and they'll try and have it so that there's at least two traitors in the very last episode. So I think there's always going to be a scenario where there's a traitor banished at the round table and then there's one traitor left. But then if every traitor who's banished at that final round table then dobs in the remaining traitor, then the Faithfuls are then going to banish them. They're never going to win.
Which is why it'd be so great if there was one where it was like there were two traitors left with one Faithful and they didn't...
That's what happened in the Australian one.
Oh, no, stop saying spoilers.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yes, the ending was just a little... However, I was also getting stressed because at the time I was watching and I thought, if Wilf does win this, how on earth is he going to explain to them? When he was swearing... Yeah. Was he swearing on his kids or... When he got hysterical, I was like, now I'm actually uncomfortable because I actually don't know how you're going to undo this lie.
I'm surprised that more people didn't say the line of like, I swear on my kids' lives, I swear on my mother's life. It kind of happened that one time. And for me, maybe that means different things to different people, but I could never swear on like my mum's life about something I was lying about.
If I didn't, totally. And it really like threw me. And because we take that as... I think that's one of the few things left in the world that we take as such, like, you take it at face value.
Which is why
it's so annoying, because Ramona does that all the time and then will be, like, shown up as it not having happened, like the sort of table at the gala thing with Dorinda or whatever. It's like, it's so true that it's like, I really believe someone if they do that. So yeah, it had a slightly odd culture. And I thought what was nice about the ending of the UK one is that by the Faithfuls winning at the end, it had a kind of joyful, triumphant end.
The most undeserving, like, Meryl, bless her, is so naive. The most of Kieran's basically said Wilf's a traitor, and even then she's like, well, I trust everyone, so
yeah. Like, another Meryl, thing shush. About the ending quickly of the UK one, and then we must talk about the US one. I really don't understand the fire business, because they all pick a thing from a box. I can get my head around that. It's a bit faffy, but like, it makes a pretty colour. What is the point of the host then taking the thing off them, putting it in a bag, which suggests that they all get mixed up, and then pulling them out one by one and saying, this is yours? But I'm like, how do you know?
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense to me why they didn't throw their own thing in.
It's a stressful job doing this show. I've thought about this. If I were to host the Traitors, the fear that I would accidentally graze someone in the initial round table when I'm selecting people.
I was thinking that.
Accidentally let slip someone's name, or like say Traitors when I meant traitor, or, you know.
Yeah. It's whatever. A lot. It's a high power.
Did you hear about this? So it wasn't on the show. They didn't show it. But apparently the reason why a lot of people knew that Alyssa was a traitor in the end is because there was some downtime during one of the tasks. And her and a few of the other Faithfuls were doing impressions of Claudia. And Alyssa, it was her turn. And she went, good evening, traitors. And everyone was like, what? She never says good evening, traitors. Like only if you're a traitor would you hear her say traitors.
That would be so stupid. Come on, Alyssa, you're better than that.
I know.
I'm so disappointed.
I know.
Anyway, US. Anyway. Okay, let's power through
this. This was kind of the reason why we wanted to talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, we should have said that right at the beginning.
Because Brandy Glanville
rocks up
on the traitors. Yeah.
And so it was very confusing for me because I just finished the UK one and I was so surprised. If Brandy hadn't been on it, they might as well have all been normies on the US one, because I didn't know who anyone was. So it was very discombobulating for my head to watch something where I didn't know who anyone was except one very specific person.
Right.
Who was also quite, I thought, misplaced in this show.
I think that's what's so funny about the American version is that there's this, first of all, there's a couple of schisms. There's a clear divide between the celebrities and the normal people.
Yes.
And the normal people are basically, I think the show suffers because of it, because it then means that half of the cast are completely overshadowed. They're not fleshed out. They cannot stand up to these massive media savvy personalities who are in the room.
It makes no sense why they wouldn't make it all C-list celebrities.
Right.
Or all normal people.
And then you're kind of annoyed because then you're like, oh, well, Reza looked like really fun TV and he was like voted out really early. And now we've got these kind of really boring people who are too nervous to say anything, who are staying on because they're just flying under the radar. So we have that. But then also within the celebrities that we have, there's then a very clear divide between the likes of Brandy Glanville and Kate and Reza and basically all the Bravo people. Mm-hmm. And then the people who have done Survivor or Big Brother, the people who are well-versed in this sort of reality competition, where they have the skills of subterfuge and manipulation, their social game is really good. And that is what was so really funny about Brandy in particular, in that she's very astute and very perceptive, and she managed to clock two of the three traitors pretty much immediately. So she's very good at that part of the game, but then she's terrible at the really necessary other part of the game of you need to sort of keep a low profile and fly under the radar. So going around the castle and basically like cornering people going, you're a traitor and you're a traitor, isn't really the way to play the game, because then you have a massive target on your back from the beginning.
I do think that she was also the victim, same with Reza, of the traitors playing quite an interesting hand at the beginning, which was get rid of really unexpected big personalities.
Yeah,
that
so
show
chaos.
That no one's safe. So I really respected that the show did that, because they must have hoped that Brandy would be on it much longer.
Yeah. I'm assuming that she got a salary for it. So they're kind of like, well, we paid for her. She's only, yeah.
So that was interesting. Let's talk about the traitors themselves on the US one. Interestingly chosen, we have to talk about Christian. One thing that I loved about the US traitors compared to the UK one was the inclusion of one traitor who was terrible at being a traitor.
Yes.
Because all three of the UK traitors were really good at being traitors. And to the point that I was like, I don't think I would be very good at this. Mm-hmm. Not at the level. It's one thing when you're playing for one night as a game. Mm-hmm. It's like on an everyday level. I thought that they did brilliantly. Christian, who is this I described him to someone as your worst nightmare when your friend's like, I've got a new boyfriend and here he is. And Christian walks in in one of his many hats.
So that guy.
And you're like, oh no. He's the kind of guy who would tell you during sex that he respects you. And I don't mean that in like a positive, like, cause I mean that in like a, oh my God, shut up way. Like everything. He's just so happy. He's just so, he's like a puppy dog, but in a totally uncharming way. And I'm so thrilled that they picked him. And my favorite thing about the whole series was watching every time he very unsubtly tried to play like a move as a traitor. And it would cut to Siri just being like, what are you doing, man?
What are you doing? Yeah.
Why are you talking?
He's also, there's a guy on the Australian Traitors as well who's a bit like this, where he's also a little bit too close to sociopathy for my liking. He's enjoying it a little bit too much. And like talks about murdering them in like a very literal way. He'll be like, I'm just like cleaning my brain and getting ready for the new one and cleaning the blood off of it. And you're like, oh God, Christian, chill out.
But watching him every breakfast do the like, no.
Ooh. Yeah. I know that we have the benefit of knowing who the traitors are, but it's like, guys, this guy is so obvious right now. Why would you be going after someone like Kate
who
draws attention to herself so much? It doesn't make any sense. Which leads me to this guy, Quentin, who is the funniest character. He's that trope as well of, I do X job, which means I'm really good at reading people. And then they go on to be terrible at the game.
I think he got it wrong every single episode.
Every single time. And it's one thing to be wrong every single episode. Loads of people are. But it's the way he was loud and wrong at the same time.
Yes.
And there's like a smugness to him where he thinks he's really telegenic. And he'll like say something in quite a, like a quippy, media savvy way where he'll be like, Kate, you're on my list. I'm adding things up and the math ain't math, sis. So you're on my list. And then it will get to the point where whatever he's saying, the truth is the literal diametrical opposite. And there was one episode where he was like, I can tell you one thing for sure, the three people I trust in this castle are, and I'm like, don't say it. And he goes on to be like, Cody, Siri, and Christian. They're the only three. I'm convinced they're faithfuls. It's so fucking funny. And every time he's proven wrong, there's no contrition. There's no element of like, maybe I should reassess my gameplay here. He's just carries on
it
chugging,
was amazing.
Doing what he's doing.
You know what else I loved was when Siri wanted to go after Nick, who was like Cody's friend, and it became very like guttural, that sense of him being like, it was very... that mafia thing of like, are you prepared to do this? And him being like, yeah, I'll do it. And being like, really? Because you seem kind of emotional about this. And being like, shut up. I'm not emotional about it. I'll do it. Fine. And the funniest thing was, this was all about someone who I swear to God I had not noticed once on the show. When he died, I was like, who? They kept showing me pictures and I was like, I have never seen that man before in my life.
Yeah. The editing I found very lopsided, and the same with the Australian one. Some people you just would never see, or suddenly they pop up.
Oh, also there was like the woman, was she called Amanda or something? The woman who Alan Cummings one morning is like, and yes, you will have all noticed that Amanda has left us or whatever. And I was like,
yeah, you're like,
I didn't even notice she'd gone or
was
who.
She murdered? Oh, news to me. All right. Could have fooled me. Moving on. I thought the UK version did a very good job of fleshing out these unknown people.
Everyone,
we have no prior relationship with them.
Much better.
And it felt very equal.
I really enjoyed Christian's appalling move to thinking he was being so clever. And it was sort of his ultimate downfall to say that he'd been recruited and had said no. And it was just wonderful watching everyone's response and watching it fall like a lead balloon. And then cutting to him in the corridor being like, yeah, I fucked up.
Yeah. He should have learned from Cody, because Cody pulled the same thing with
Big mistake.
Kyle, where he's like, it's so weird. Like, when they were going upstairs last night, they were like, if anything happens to me, look at this person. And I'm not going to give any spoilers away. Last time I'm going to talk about it, but on the Australian version, a similar thing happens where someone gets a bit sloppy. They say that same story, like, before they died, they said, look at this person. And the person that they're telling it to doesn't believe it, but they don't let it show. And then they systematically spend the rest of the day going to every other person. And they say, we're going to vote for this traitor. We're not going to tell them. We're not going to even talk about it at the round table. We're just going to write their name on the board and blindside them. It's very good gameplay.
Exciting. I love that you were like, no spoilers, but here's exactly what happens in this one episode.
Beat for beat, what happens?
So I want to chat quickly about the ending of the US one. Because...
Oh, no, wait, before that, because I want to talk about Rachel.
Oh, of course. Of course.
She's so... I'm familiar with her work previously, her oeuvre, because she was on three editions of The Amazing Race, and that's the only one of those reality shows that I watch. And she's very good, but she has that weird affectation to her where for someone who's basically lived her life on reality TV, she is like every girl who's never left your hometown.
Yes.
You know, she's like very... just basic, I guess. So we have this really hilarious feud between her and Kate, where Kate, say what you will about her.
I loved her.
Round of applause. I loved her. But that one scene where they're doing the cabin in the woods task and Rachel's like, oh my God, I filmed a scary movie in a cabin in the wood once. And then without missing a beat, Kate goes, was it your honeymoon? So fucking funny. And then the eventual round table. So again, it feels very similar to John, actually, where Rachel's whole thing was like, I play these games for a living. Like, it's just a game. I don't take it seriously. And then as soon as people start systematically voting her out of that round table, she gets so emotional, takes it so personally. Like, every person, she has a whole Et tu, Brute speech prepared.
Well, I don't believe you, but great.
Why the sad face? You're not sad. No. I'm a fucking faithful.
It's amazing.
It's very good.
Yes. Rachel's exit, phenomenal. And to finish off, the end of the show. So I tell you what I want to talk about. How did Ciri Blagg, voting off Ari at the last moment with no explanation.
Yeah.
And sort of a vague hint of like, I don't think you deserve...
Yeah.
To get this.
Yeah.
And really quite easily read into as like, because you came in too late. Mm-hmm. And the other two are just like, wow. And then at the last minute, Ciri pulls a blinder and catches a traitor like that. And we're just so grateful. I don't understand how that didn't give her away.
I know. It's actually very poor gameplay, but she terrible. Deserves it because she lucked out because I guess the two faithfuls left are two of the most blindly trusting loyal, trusting people ever.
Who literally are just like, thank God for Ciri. Thank God we had her.
Just dragging us through this game. Oh my God.
Watching that ending of her revealing it. And it was just funny. It was amazing, but it was also like exactly what the UK won when I was like, but what happens if he wins? Surely it just ends on a really sad note. And then it was like, ah, that's what happens. It does end on a really sad note. And it's the strangest thing to watch a reality TV show, like a game, and it end with just this whimper of you've betrayed your friends, broken their hearts, Andy being there being like, I give you grace.
Yeah.
And I forgive you or whatever. And it's just like, I hope you're happy, Ciri. Here's your money.
I think that's why we had to have this ending on the UK version. And I think this is maybe why the UK one was way more emotional, is that our reality television is actually comparatively not that cutthroat, in the sense that we don't have Survivor, our iteration of Big Brother, you're just hanging out in a house and the public vote you out. There's no like jockeying for dominance or getting like power of veto. There's so much more of a primacy placed on American television with manipulation and playing that sort of social game. And I think they can take it a lot more in their stride. I actually think if Wilf had just won outright, it would have been too much of a bitter pill for us, the British public, to swallow for its very first season.
Yeah,
maybe in future series, we will have more of a palate for it. But it's very, very funny, very good stuff. Had me on tenterhooks from beginning to end. And you're so right. I feel like every season following it, we'll probably be trying to replicate.
It was just a joy to be there to witness those first seasons. And also it was one of those zeitgeist moments where everyone was talking about it. And it felt like when the first Married at First Sight Australia dropped during lockdown here. I mean, that was a much bigger commitment. But I love those moments where it's like you were there for that series and everyone was in it together.
It was nice for me to feel part of the conversation because I'm never normally very au fait with what's going on apart from Real Housewives. So it was nice for me to be a part of that.
That's true. It was nice to feel like I could have the kind of trash conversations with a wider group of friends. I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
But all of that being said, as special as this episode has been, we must get back to Real Housewives in the very near future.
Yeah, should we record something? So, like, are you? What's your schedule like?
The crowds are baying. Let's not even touch on my schedule, okay. But I'm sure that we'll work it out. But but I feel like everyone is clearly positively gagging for us to
positively gagging.
Suddenly just
yes,
wait, that was a bit much.
work the house down, puss boots.
I feel like it's time for us to suddenly just be like, boom, Shannon Bador, or like, you know, I don't know, chuck something really exciting into the mix.
Yeah. Who would be a good housewife on Traitors? I mean, apart from Brandy Glanville, obviously.
Apart from Shannon Bador.
Who do you think would genuinely play a good game rather than just being good TV? I have one in my head.
Tamra?
Yes. She'd be very good.
Who do you have in your head?
I was going to say Heather Dubrow.
I think she'd be voted out quite early, actually.
Yeah, she's quite unlikable in that way.
I'm trying to think who's stuck it out for ages on the shows, because I think that's one thing with Tamra is that she's fucked up so many times, but there's something inherently, like, people just want her around.
Yeah.
I don't think Bethany would probably be really good.
Yeah.
Bethany would be a very good faithful. And she'd be very good at, like, staying on the show and accusing people. I don't know how good she'd be as an actual traitor.
She has that self-assuredness that you kind of do. It's such a tricky one to get right, being a faithful, because you sort of do have to be loud in your opinion and put a lot of blind faith into it with no real empirical evidence.
Ooh,
and just hope
maybe we need, like, a Bluestone Manor traitors crossover of, Real Housewives and the Traitors.
Dorinda would take it literally, though, and actually start killing people.
I'm very excited by the next lineup of Ultimate Girls Trip.
Ellie, the way I've been walking around with this rosy haze around me, just the thought that somewhere on this planet, there are cameras on Alex McCord right this very second. It makes me so giddy. It's added 10 years to my life.
I love that I'm in a new relationship and I'm like skipping down the street and you're just like, me too.
Alex McCord, she's back, baby. Yeah. Hopefully there'll be a part deux to our Alex McCord episode. I'm sure she's going to give us so many gems.
I would love that so much.
I've got my creative juices flowing for this coming season.
Well, we shall convene Tootsuite and work out who's next on our hit list.
Sounds good, yes.
I'll meet you in the tower tonight.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Housewives Archives. If you enjoyed the show, then please give us a like, or do we have a like? Give us a comment, or leave us a review.
Give us a poke.
Or subscribe. We really appreciate your support, and we can't wait to come back soon. I think it's more fun when I make them up. Bye.
Yeah, just riff. Bye.